Hi, this is John Harcher, and welcome to episode 4 of Keep On Grooving. The Alan Douglas era begins as the former producer returns to the world of Jimi Hendrix and ends up guiding the releases for the next 20 years. Episode 4, The Alan Douglas Era, 1975 to 1979. So what was Reprise to do? They had Jimi Hendrix, a major star in their stable, pass away but leave a lot of material that could be used for possible release. However, the last two albums to be presented to them, the soundtrack to the Jimi Hendrix film and Loose Ends, were less than aspiring. One didn't do well, and they passed on the other one altogether. With the passing of manager Mike Jeffrey, one headache for them had been removed. But there had to be something else they could do. Somebody had to take the time to go through what they had and come up with another plan. Even if there were some tapes missing, there were still hundreds of hours to listen to and assess. Eddie Kramer would have been a good choice, but he'd made his feelings known and he'd found all the good stuff and went back to his career as a producer-engineer. Eventually, the name Alan Douglas came up. Douglas worked at United Artists Records back in the 60s, working on jazz albums before starting his own label. He put together a posthumous compilation of material by the late comic Lenny Bruce and got it onto the market. He'd been friends with Jimmy and worked with the band of Gypsies for a few sessions before quitting. According to Billy Cox, it was no big loss. He made an appearance in the film talking about scoring drugs for Jimmy. Not exactly the kind of thing you'd necessarily want out there as your sole moment, but hey, it was the 60s. Douglas was given the task of going through all the tapes Reprise had on hand to figure out how to present them in album form. There had to be something salvageable here. In his search, he found a number of songs that could be used for an album but had problems. The backing track wasn't good, the song wasn't quite complete, you know, things like that. So he came up with a couple of solutions. One was to bring in some studio musicians, Jeff Mironoff on guitar, Bob Babbitt on bass, and Alan Schwartzberg on drums, and have them play along with Jimmy's guitar and vocal track, wiping out performances by Noel Redding, Mitch Mitchell, Billy Cox, Buddy Miles, and anyone else who happened to be on there. For songs that were unfinished, vocals were looped and other guitar parts were laid in. So in those cases, they were created almost from scratch. It's one thing when Jimmy takes his Easy Rider multi-track over to Electric Lady and replaces practically everything about it. It'd be something else if you or I did that. So let's see what Alan came up with. Crash Landing. The album starts out on a good note. It presents the studio version of Message of Love fairly unaltered, with Billy and Buddy appearing on the track. Jimmy Maulin provided some incidental percussion, but having heard the original track and the Crash Landing version, I couldn't tell you what it is. I say fairly unaltered because despite leaving the original musicians on the tracks, Alan made one big change. The song, as mixed, did not have a guitar solo, and what's a Jimi Hendrix song without a guitar solo? Douglas took the middle eight section, or is it a bridge? I'm not clear on that sometimes. He cut that out, took the instrumentation from underneath one of the verses, put that in its place, then took a guitar solo and plopped it over top. He also cut out some mumbled lyrics by Jimmy in the next to last vocal section. Now, the ethics of doing that are iffy, but it would have been okay if he hadn't and gone and cut up the master tape and threw the edited pieces out. You never edit a master tape. You do your editing off of a dub. That's one of the first things they taught us in film school. Don't screw around with your negatives. For 35 years, all anybody had was the ruined master until one of those missing tapes I talked about turned up and gave us the song back in its original form without the guitar solo. Which did intensify the question, where did that guitar solo come from? Was it from a different take of Message of Love, or did it come from somewhere else altogether? I'd love for Eddie and John McDermott to get to the bottom of this once and for all. The early 1968 ancestor of Earth Blues, Somewhere, finally gets its release under the name Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Where have I heard that title before? This is the first track where the studio musicians come in and do their work. And in this case, they do a good job. The original track of this version supposedly had Stephen Stills on bass and someone out of the ordinary on drums, not Mitch Mitchell or Buddy Miles. That track, out in bootleg form, isn't so bad. The overdub version that Mitch did in 1971, which was finally released on the 2000 box set, is a little tentative, like he wasn't quite sure where the beats were, so I can understand why they held that one back. Hendrix fans have generally looked down on what Douglas did with the backing musicians, with the possible exception of this track. Bob Babbitt and Alan Schwartzberg were seasoned professionals, having worked on a large number of hit songs, so they knew how to hold a beat together. I'm not sure if they needed another guitarist, though, and eventually Jeff Mironoff agreed. Now, in a word to Jimmy from 51st Anniversary, that was the good side, baby. Now here comes the bad. Crash Landing was recorded in April 1969 with members of the band The Cherry People providing backup, including organ. It was another song with some difficult timing issues, and sometimes drummer Rocky Isaacs wasn't quite up to the task. Not necessarily his fault. Jimmy was just trying out some new things and going off in new directions not a lot of people could follow. The organ was pretty cool, though. Too bad they didn't keep it on. So again, bringing in Bob and Alan to provide a bass isn't necessarily a bad thing. Having a bunch of female backup singers chime in about Dirty Sheets, well, that's where the song and the album kind of went off the rails. The singers do a nice job, but it's what and when they sang that was the issue. Then there was the guitar solo. The take used as a bass for this version was without a solo, so Douglas went and got one. This time, I have no idea if it was actually from another Crash Landing take. It sounds like it came from somewhere completely different. It doesn't match up with what's there at all. It's an important song in the catalog since it's the source that gave us Freedom and Dolly Dagger, and unfortunately, it wouldn't be the last time it got messed up. Next up is Come Down Hard on Me. Wait a minute, didn't Reprise just pass on an album with this song? Yep, the same song that was on Loose Ends gets the Crash Landing treatment. Only in this case, the over-the-top addition was the sporadic guitar burst from Mironoff. He was trying to do a point-counterpoint thing with Jimmy's guitar, and it just doesn't work. Douglas also decided to loop the vocals a second time to extend the song, so they sort of fit. And they just took the track from Loose Ends and looped an extra verse, and it probably would have been just fine. But if you're going to loop a verse, please loop all four lines. One with three lines? Side two starts with the instrumental Peace in Mississippi. It was recorded by The Experience during the TTG sessions in October 1968, and it ran about 7 minutes. It was never revived in later sessions, though some people think of Trash Man Midnight as an extension of this. Frankly, there's nothing wrong with Noel or Mitch's playing on this song. Some trimming might be called for. This one comes in about 4.5 minutes. Now, Douglas would use the song again on Voodoo Soup, this time leaving Noel and Mitch on and adding a minute back in. Next up is With the Power, aka Power of Soul, another Band of Gypsies track with Billy and Buddy left on. However, far more work was done to this song compared to Message of Love. The original track ran 6 minutes long. This one clocks in at a very tight 3:15. And once again, when Alan made his edits, he tossed away the cut parts. From what people can surmise, pieces of the backing vocals may have been lost for good. Three copies were later found, though, one with a few edits on it. Did Alan leave it laying around? I don't know. And two complete ones being Jimmy's mixes from February 3rd and August 22nd, 1970. Alan also jumbled the verses around to make it sound like the first yeah yeahs that go through the rest of the song actually turn up in the first part. You know, so it's kind of a plus for this version. It's like, I don't know why Jimmy mixed it that way originally, so just half a star for that. Up next is Stone Free Again, based on a version recorded in April 1969. Now, some people took this as a sign Jimmy was really starving for new material, having to go back to his first composition for inspiration. Now, remember, it hadn't been released in the United States originally, and he mentioned he didn't like the fact Red House had been left off of the U.S. version of Are You Experience. A few months after those comments, Smash Hits would come out and take care of both of those songs as they both made the cut. For Stone Free, Jimmy tweaked the arrangement and used it starting with the Band of Gypsies concert, playing it in both late shows as well as many times during the 1970 tour. Again, this is a case where there's really nothing wrong with the original backing track that's now available in the 2000 box set. And that's pretty surprising considering the condition the experience was in at the time. Plus, there's also one of these little ironic things in there. One of the background vocalists on the original track is later well-known studio guitarist Andy Fairweather Lowe. Now, they left him in the mix on Crash Landing, uncredited, so a studio musician is backing up other studio musicians without credit. Well, life is funny like that sometimes. The album ends with the song Captain Coconut. Oh, is it going to be fun trying to unpack this one? The title comes from the lyrics of Keep On Groovin', aka Lower Alcatraz. Feels like I got run over by Captain Coconut and a dog named Rover. But this track isn't anything Jimmy actually created. Remember I'd mentioned that John Jansen had put together a tape from three different songs to try to find something from Rainbow Bridge, but Eddie Kramer immediately discouraged it? Well, instead of throwing it away, Jansen just put it aside. And guess who found it? In his hunt for original material to use, Alan Douglas found a track that wasn't original. So what is this interesting piece of work? The first little section is Jimmy playing solo through some unified Leslie effect. I've never heard this section in any other song, official or bootleg. There's some speculation it may be an early recording from Electric Lady in late June or early July. The bulk of the song is taken from a Band of Gypsies jam on that magic date, January 23rd, 1970. But it's not at all like you hear it here. It's almost 13 minutes into a 20-minute jam. Buddy is hitting the hi-hat and tossing a snare hit in every now and then when Jimmy lets a note go that sounds like a moan, then breaks into a solo that ends around 4 minutes later with some feedback. Apparently what Jansen did was left Jimmy's guitar up and mixed down Buddy and Billy, so it sounds like he starts in by himself, and then the other two come in later. I say apparently because I've never heard Jansen's original treatment of the track. I'm guessing by following what Douglas had Bob Babbitt and Alan Schwartzberg do. The ending section with crazy backward-sounding guitars and underwater sounds comes from an instrumental from the TTG session with Jimmy on guitars and drums called The New Rising Sun. Seems that title had been bouncing around in his head for quite a while. Was Jimmy going to use it? There's no evidence to say yes, but at the very least, the tape wasn't lost. So there you go. A brand new Jimi Hendrix album clocking in at a healthy 29 minutes and 34 seconds. Makes those early Van Halen albums seem like epics. We couldn't get 10 songs at 36 minutes? Then there was a little matter of the songwriting credits. On the three songs that had appeared in other versions, Message of Love, Power of Soul, and Stone Free, Jimmy was credited as sole writer. The other five were listed as Hendrix Douglas. When asked about this at one point, Douglas just said, well, you have to ask the lawyers. Maybe there was some situation where the unreleased songs needed another name since they were new creations. I don't know. You got me. The thing is, Come Down Hard on Me should have already been credited to Hendrix due to its appearance on Loose Ends. Was it because it hadn't appeared in the U.S. yet? I suppose. The legal situation worked itself out rather quickly, and the next album didn't have Alan's name at all in the writing credits. Yeah, things are funny that way sometimes. One other little bit of trivia. Alan's co-producer on this album was an old hand in the New York production circles, Tony Bongiovi. Yep. John's cousin who later helped him break into the business. Crash Landing came out in May 1975 and garnered a lot of publicity as new Hendrix music. Geraldo Rivera even did a story on it back in his early days at WABC. The public bought it, and how. It ended up hitting the top five in the U.S., but only number 35 in the U.K. Either way, it did show there was still a pretty big audience out there for Hendrix music. So if the audience wants more, give them what they want. However, did the audience want more of this? Midnight Lightning. In almost a mirror situation of the first two posthumous Hendrix albums in 1971, the first two Douglas albums were released exactly the same time apart, one in March, one in November. He brought Tony Bongiovi back as co-producer. Bob Babbitt and Alan Schwartzberg also came back on bass and drums. But eventually they lost Jeff Mironoff, who gave up trying to be Jimmy's second guitarist. Lance Quinn was brought in as a replacement. And this time around, Mitch made the cut to stay on. The album kicks off with a heavily edited version of Trash Man, the co-song to Midnight from War Heroes. It kept just the main riff and bridge turnaround that differentiated it from the earlier song. But why use a song that sounds almost identical to a previously released one? Well, the original song was now harder to get a hold of. With the success of Crash Landing, Reprise and Alan Douglas decided to cut itself as loose from Mike Jeffrey as they could and decided to delete Rainbow Bridge, In the West, and War Heroes from the U.S. catalog, but kept Cry of Love in print. Oddly enough, overseas, Rainbow Bridge remained in print on Reprise since they retained all rights to it as it was officially a soundtrack. The label put out a press release saying that at a later date, the best of these deleted recordings would appear on a future album. From what they ended up putting out later, they apparently didn't think much of any of them. The unedited Trash Man came out almost 30 years later on Hear My Music. The title track is up next. Midnight Lightning was one of those songs Jimmy could never quite get down to his satisfaction in the studio. He recorded two solo versions with just him and a guitar like an old blues number, foot tapping and all, very John Lee Hooker-ish. At Electric Lady, he recorded a version during the July 1st sessions, but supposedly without vocals. The one used as a bass here was like it recorded a week or two later and sounds similar to the Isle of Wight version. But lyric-wise, it was somewhat different, not using any of the Keep on Groovin' lyrics. Instead, he used a variation of the song Stoop Down, which included some somewhat suggestive verses about Mother Hubbard and her poor dog. You know, don't want to go there. These lyrics Alan kept in and had the backup singers join in to emphasize the point. He also looped some Midnight Lightnings in to fill out the rest of the song. Officially, the unedited take has never come out. Jimmy mixed a Midnight Lightning on August 22nd. However, I don't know which version of his. It was July 1st or the later one. Up next, we finally get that studio version of Hear My Train A-Comin' and with Mitch Mitchell still on drums. The version here was recorded around the same time as Stone Free from the last album, and for a band that was coming apart, the experience seemed to be doing a pretty good job right there at the end. The unedited take, running about 2 minutes longer, Alan cut out the second verse, showed up on a later album, and honestly, it should have been the official studio version. As for this one, there was no reason to take Noel off the song. Bob Babbitt decided to do his own thing instead of trying to follow the established bass line, which had been there in Hear My Train A-Comin' since the first version at the BBC. It's not bad per se, it's just not the bass line to Hear My Train A-Comin'. Side one ends with Gypsy Boy. It's an early version of Hey Baby that Jimmy and Buddy cut in March 1969, and I have an odd idea that might have made this song sound better. Could they have taken Jimmy's guitar off the song? It's beautifully done, and the backup singers compliment Jimmy very well. There's just one minor problem. Jimmy's guitar is out of tune. It sounds like it's just one string, but that one is really out, like by a good quarter step. If they could have gotten Jeff or Lance to do their best Jimmy imitation with some effects pedals on, we might not have noticed, and the song would have sounded a whole lot better. The acoustic guitars they added are a nice touch, though. Side 2 starts off with Blue Suede Shoes. Wait, Blue Suede Shoes? What, again? Did somebody have a deal with Carl Perkins or something? Alan dips back into the Loose Ends bag. It's almost like they were going to get that album released one way or the other in the U.S. He ended up cobbling together a full version of the Rockabilly Classic by taking 2 minutes from the January 23rd session and looping another minute and a half on. I mean, really, there wasn't any other song they could have released, especially one Jimmy actually wrote. I'm sure the family would have liked the residuals. As I mentioned back in episode 2, the band of Gypsies, never to my knowledge, put together a full studio take of Machine Gun, though they did a few run-throughs at Baggies, which are not on the Baggies album, by the way. The Woodstock band did do a couple of takes a week or so after the festival. This version is based off the second take. The first one was kind of just a jam, and it includes some lyrical throwbacks to Isabella. It's the longest of all the songs on Crash Landing and Midnight Lightning, and even so, it's still cut by over 3 minutes. Not that it couldn't have used some trimming anyway, since it was really unfocused at this time. This time, Bob generally follows Billy's distinctive bass runs from the Band of Gypsies album. It really isn't Machine Gun without them. Jimmy has two acknowledged straight blues classics with Red House and Hear My Train a Comin'. The Woodstock band has a phenomenal original sitting in the vaults called Lord, I Sing the Blues for Me and You, that for some reason still remains officially unreleased. The Band of Gypsies also had several that emerged from that amazing session on January 23rd. Experience Hendrix, please release this session in full. There was the instrumental country blues, $7 in My Pocket, which is part of the Freedom Highway of Desire jam, and finally, Once I Had a Woman. There are numerous versions floating out there. Supposedly, if you cobble them all together, the original is around 10 minutes long. Some have the harmonica player, some thankfully don't. And it hasn't been really determined who it is, other than his first name is Don. Whoever it is, he's no Paul Caruso. For this overdub version, they decided to add in the harmonica player, having Buddy Lucas do a better job of contributing to the song to whoever was on the original version. There's also a cool intro here that's not on the officially released one from the blues album 20 years later. I would have liked to edit it onto the original on my own to give a full version, but they had Alan Swartzberg drumming all over top of that. The album finishes up with Beginnings. Can we please get the name of the song straight, please? On Woodstock 2, it's Jam Back at the House. On War Heroes, it's Beginning. Here, it's Beginnings. I know Jimmy loved Terry Kath of Chicago, but swiping one of their song titles? This version actually has more in common with the Woodstock one, since it's the studio version done by the Gypsy Sons and Rainbows band around the same time they did Machine Gun. Two things I don't understand. One, again, was there nothing else to use? This album had two alternate versions of songs on War Heroes and one directly from Loose Ends. I'm honestly surprised we didn't get a redub version of Look Over Yonder. And number two, if you're going to do the song, why in God's name do you concentrate on the section that is most people think really need to be shortened in the first place? Most of this one is the annoying little turnaround in the middle. If you listen to the Woodstock version, the guitars are really off. This one's a little better than that, but not by much. The War Heroes version whacked a minute out of it. You should have concentrated on another part of the song if they were going to do this. This one is also credited to Mitch, so that just adds into the confusion. History is replete with examples of the sequel that comes out too soon after the first one and ends up not doing well. King Kong and Godzilla each fell victim to this, and the Star Wars franchise is just the latest example, you know, when they had Solo come out 6 months after The Last Jedi, that certainly didn't help it. The audience didn't bite as hard this time, and the album missed the top 40 in both the US and the UK. To me, it was one of those ironies where the material is generally stronger. I'm thinking specifically of Hear My Train a Comin' and Machine Gun. And this one ran over 35 minutes. But it seems people weren't really that thrilled with the recent musical additions. Think of the time and money they could have saved by leaving the original tracks on, done a little trimming here and there, and maybe doing one song, you know, like Somewhere, as an experiment with the overdubs. So for the second time in 3 years, Reprise had to stop and rethink yet again what to do with the Hendrix catalog and backlog of tapes. This rethinking lasted two more years. 1976 and 1977 were the rare years since Hendrix's death that saw no new Hendrix album officially released. What they could have done is go back, take all the songs that were done at Electric Lady that were released on Cry of Love, Rainbow Bridge, War Heroes, and Loose Ends, and put them on an album called, I don't know, First Rays of the New Rising Sun? It's a double album, 5 songs on the side. You can even tout it as having unreleased songs for the US market. Then they could have done my Smash Hits 2 idea, again with songs never before on LP. But they held off until 1978 and released the double album, The Essential Jimi Hendrix. And to their credit, they tried to make it something different than just a rehash of Smash Hits. Only 2 songs on this set were on the US version of Smash Hits, Purple Haze and Along the Watchtower.
By any definition, those two are certainly essential Hendrix. The album starts off with Are You Experienced and Third Stone from the Sun, two songs that weren't singles but important to Hendrix as an artist. After Purple Haze, it then includes a generous helping of tracks from Axis Boldest Love and Electric Ladyland. It ends with the first three songs from Cry of Love and returned four songs to wide release. Dolly Dagger and Room Full of Mirrors, the two songs that happen to have been pulled off Cry of Love, and Stepping Stone and Isabella, the two songs that happen to have been pulled off of Rainbow Bridge. It might not have been a huge seller, but did well enough to warrant a second volume. They also figured out a way to get longtime fans to buy it. More on that in a minute. Essential Hendrix Volume 2 came out in 1979 and did things a little differently. Side 1 was loaded up with the other two UK singles, Hey Joe and When Cries Mary, favorites from Are You Experienced like Foxy Lady, Fire, and I Don't Live Today, as well as Crosstown Traffic from Electric Ladyland. Like smash hits, Axis got passed over. The side could have had room for either Up From the Skies or Spanish Castle Magic. Side 2 contained three essential live performances, Wild Thing, Machine Gun, and the Star-Spangled Banner. An interesting thing to note is that all three of these were available before Jimmy passed away. Overall, nothing out of the ordinary, but kind of a companion to the first album. During the TTG sessions, the Experience recorded their version of the Van Morrison Chestnut from his days with them, Gloria. This version wasn't likely to get any airplay as Jimmy decided to play up the seedier side of the song, but it sounded like they were having fun and it turned out to be a popular addition to the catalog. The odd thing was, A, it appeared as a separate one-sided single included with the essential package, and then B, in the UK, it was included with Volume 1. In the US, it was included with Volume 2. Like I said, they weren't exactly hot sellers. Neither one cracked the top 100, but overall, they were useful enough. So that kind of sums up the 70s as far as Jimmy's posthumous career goes. There are a bunch of releases over in Europe repackaging songs, but the ones I talked about earlier were the key ones. His back catalog was still selling well. They pared down the post-70 output to just three albums, and he was still getting played regularly on FM stations. But they still had this backlog of tapes that could be used for something. Overdubbing modern musicians was out of the question now, so what else was there to do? Answer? Get out the scissors. Next time, Jimmy is reborn, of sorts, as a jazz musician. We finally get that double live album, and the CD era gives Alan and team an excuse for another greatest hits album. That's on the next episode of Keep On Grooving. Remember, if you like what you're hearing, please hit the subscribe button. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google, and now Stitcher. I'm John Hartcher. Thanks for listening.